Good morning. This is Chair Peter Fisher. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Behavioral Health Policy Division to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Good morning, everyone. Frederick.
Present.
Frankie. Frankie.
Present.
Thacker.
Thacker present.
Baker.
Baker present.
Becker Finn. Hansen.
Hansen present.
Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Lippert. Moeller.
Present.
Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thompson.
Thompson present.
Let's see, Becker Finn. Lippert.
Lippert present.
All right, quorum is present.
Thank you. With quorum is present, we will now move on to the next part of the agenda, and that will be approval of the division minutes from February 24th, 2021. Are there any corrections or changes anyone has at this point in time? Not seeing any hands go up. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Would somebody like to make that motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Katuza Watoon moves to approve the minutes of February 24th, 2021. Please, everyone, unmute yourselves for this vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is approved. The minutes are approved from February 24th, 2021. Members, we're going to be moving along at a quicker pace today to ensure that we finish all of our business as committee as we start coming up on deadlines. We will be resuming our conversation later in our meeting today about the uniform service standards to take official action on the proposal. But first, we're going to have take up a few other bills. My hope is to take no more than 20 minutes on each bill to ensure that we complete our agenda on time. And I've asked our authors and testifiers to help us meet that goal by keeping their opening remarks brief. The first bill that we're going to be coming up on will be House File 1390. The chair will move that House File 1390 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Division. We're going to try to vote on this bill by 8:50. Representative Bierman, welcome to the division. We do have an author's amendment filed on this bill's first stop, so the author will move the chair will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like for consideration by the committee. I do understand that there's amendment to the amendment, however, to make some technical corrections to the A1. So the chair will move the A2 amendment to the A1 amendment. Ms. Sutterman, would you like to be able to explain the A2 amendment, please?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members, the A2 amendment simply removes a reference to Subdivision 3A in two spots, and that's because Subdivision 3A is being removed in the A1 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sutterman. Are there any questions regarding the A2 amendment? Hearing none, this will be a voice vote. If you could unmute yourselves. All in favor of approving the A2 to the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion prevails and the A2 amendment to the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Bierman, is there anything else you'd like us to know about the A1 amendment before we vote on it?
No, Mr. Chair, I think you've covered things with A1 in the documents.
Okay. Thank you very much. On the motion to adopt the A1 amendment as amended, all in favor, this will be a voice vote again, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, motion is approved. The A1 amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Bierman, please go ahead and present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I bring you the House File 1390 this morning. This is the Minnesota Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinics. The CCBHCs are part of a new model of delivering integrated behavioral health care to Minnesotans. Originally built under a federal demonstration project, the CCBHC model is moving into being a benefit under medical assistance. As the state CCBHC model is moving into the state plan authority, we are looking to update the Minnesota statute to align with the state plan, provide clarity in model structure, and update federal citations in the current law. The language changes in this bill are adding clarity and guidance to the current CCBH model, and many sections of new language come out of the state amendment submitted to CMS to align the statute with the state plan. HF 1390 would make the following policy changes to CCBH statutes: correcting federal citations, aligns statute language with Medicaid expectations and commitments, offers more structure to referral processes and partnerships, recommends task force for future CCBHC licensure, and outlines and clarifies a new state-based quality performance structure. So we've talked about the amendments already. Basically, again, clarifying the intent of some sections of the bill and adds further clarity and alignment with Medicaid state plan language. So these just allow adjust timelines to allow better flow of process and operationalizing some sections of the bill. These are all technical changes, adjusting state statutes and conforming to CMS protocols. Members, no changes to the proven CCBH model nor any fiscal cost are included in this bill. I do not have any testifiers, but I do have DHS here and Ms. Palin from the Minnesota Association of Community Health Programs to answer any technical questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bierman, for the presentation. I see we do have questions. Representative Backer, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. First question I have is, I'm confused. And hopefully the author can help me. With an amendment, what I understand that we did is we just deleted the new language sections in the bill. What was the reason behind that? Because the bill came, now we have an amendment, which we really didn't discuss at all. We just, that's why I voted no. There was no discussions on this. So help me through this, because the amendments just deleted the new language sections in the bill.
So,
Representative Bierman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backer, the amendment was designed to eliminate the costs which were associated with implementing or adding rulemaking and working group. And so the DHS would still be designing and overseeing the project, but it eliminated the federal request for rulemaking to be part of the bill, and also adding a working group that would be ongoing. And perhaps Ms. Palin, I see, has unmuted, and she may want to add to that description.
Okay. Ms. Palin, would you like to add any additional comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Bierman and Representative Backer. I'm Jenny Palin. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. And yes, Representative Bierman's answer was correct to our intent. We were removing the requirement for official rulemaking in the bill, as well as the official task force, because we learned that those would come with some additional costs. In place of those, we added language in the amendment in the first in section one of the bill to for the department to work with stakeholders and the CCBHCs if they have any changes they want to make to criteria or any of the certification process, so that the clinics would have ample heads up that any changes were coming. To the task force or the working group, we believe there are other processes in place where we will be able to have those discussions in terms of the next evolution of the model.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Palin. Representative Backer, Backer.
Yeah, just a follow-up here. Thank you so much. And right now, what hiccups are the CCVHS facing in the future? Can you maybe the author or the testifier there can share that? What hiccups are we seeing? I know we talked yesterday, Ms. Palin, and so forth, but the one question I was not able to ask you yesterday is, what hiccups are CCVHCs facing in the future, then, please?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Bierman, go ahead.
I will certainly let Ms. Palin go as well. Representative Backer, I would point to the expansive services provided by the CCVHCs, and I think that coordinating all of the services they provide in communities around the state, which are different, would certainly be one of the bigger obstacles in starting clinics and being able to provide all of those services in-house. But this is one of the things I liked most about this bill when it was first brought to me, was the expansive nature of the way they operate and how comprehensive they are, and especially to the follow-up services that they provide to patients, which is so critical in this area. But let's hear from Ms. Palin as well, please.
Ms. Palin, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Backer, I agree with Representative Bierman. And if I may, I would say that because this is a new model and it is something that we are still building and evolving, I would say it's not so much concerns for hiccups for us as much as it's an ongoing conversation and an ongoing development process. And so the language that we're bringing forward today, we see as part of that next phase of refinement as we keep moving the model forward and keep building on what we've learned, the experiences we've had, and using that to improve the model as we keep moving forward.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Palin. Representative Backer, anything else?
Let me just think here a second. I think we're good here. Now, one of the things I think of the author shared in about the rulemaking, maybe I heard this wrong, but I understand that the reporting of this group was deleted. What was the mindset behind that?
Representative Bierman or Ms. Palin?
And that would be my last question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Backer.
Mr. Chair, I'll let Ms. Palin handle that one.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Palin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Backer. Could you point me out to the specific language that you're concerned about where reporting was removed?
Well, just going over the bill briefly, it seemed like the working group and the report was deleted in the language. Mm-hmm. I know the author talked about rulemaking, so I'm getting clarification on that.
I understand. Thank you, Representative Backer. So these were actually two separate sections intended to have two separate outcomes, if I could. The report that was part of the language underneath the task force was really, the intent behind that was so that as we continue to move this model forward, that there would be a specific time and conversation dedicated to how that process would be completed. And part of that was the outcome of that was, you know, requesting a recommendation or a final report coming out of that. We believe that that having that formal task force and formal recommendation is not ultimately necessary to ensure that as we move into next phases of the model and evolution, that those conversations can still be had. We think there's other vehicles to be able to do that.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Chair Fisher, you are muted.
Thank you. Representative Frankie, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bierman. CCVHCs are a great product that are providing a lot of services. Representative Bierman, I was wondering if you could explain to the public, because and you started to a little bit a minute ago to Representative Backer in one of your responses, but just so people get an idea of what a CCVHC is and what kind of a model we're talking about, what types of different services, how does that interact with each other so that you know, the people listening that may not know all the acronyms that get thrown at us, what this actually does and how it helps deliver these services in a better way. And then I have a second question I'll just throw right out there that hopefully you can throw in there. You know, these are all based on the federal program, the model to deliver this. All this design change and everything, are we still going to be conforming, and will there be federal funding coming in to help keep these ongoing? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Bierman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, thank you for those very good questions. You are correct. It is a model that is comprehensive in its care for people with mental health and addiction issues. And I think there's a lot in this that attracted me to it, was that it's not just one or the other, and it really works at looking at the individuals and doing comprehensive analysis of the individuals and helping them get what they need to treat and to manage their issues going forward. And I think that analysis is one part of it, but then the immediate help. What do they need? I mean, this model addresses things as far as residency, for instance. I mean, very important. There's somewhere, you know, there's going to be in-house treatment for some. There's going to be outpatient treatment for others. And they bring in the families as well to help build that support around people. So it's really a comprehensive overall way to address the needs of the individual. And it has 24-hour service as well, which I think is critical. So there's access immediately there, and just getting people to the people they need to see and understanding what the individual needs in their given situation. So it's I'll let Ms. Palin continue, but that's just sort of the comprehensive whole health model that is being built here. And I think that, you know, in all of our communities, we're struggling with mental health and how to help people on a daily basis, and where do we take them for treatment. And this is just a model that is really a shining example of what this could look like in the future in communities across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Bierman. Ms. Palin, would you like to add, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Frankie. Yes, I would agree with Representative Bierman. The CCBHC model was really designed with the intent to be a one-stop shop, if you will, for clients who are seeking outpatient behavioral health services, to be able to provide or address as many of what they're needing as possible within one organization, with the intent of taking that that burden off of the client to have to try to navigate the system. It's really around, how do we build client-centered, team-based care that is designed to be responsive and proactive to support clients' needs. One of my clinic members describes it really well in my mind. I say it's going from a very traditional kind of a colonial style house where we're all part of the same organization and all part of the same structure, but things are separated by rooms and doors and very distinctive areas. And it's taking that kind of design, delivery design, to an open floor plan, where now everyone is working together. They're all circled around the client, and there really aren't those barriers in between all of our programs. And it takes that from an internal redesign to an external redesign as well, where we are scaling out and doing very active direct care coordination with providers and primary care to connect clients with those needs, connecting them with other social service needs that they may have, so that we're really providing that comprehensive support and care to our clients. To your second question, Representative Frankie, as this model is moving into a permanent model within our state and within our Medicaid program, the state, it is eligible, the services are eligible for that federal match. And so there will be that federal match coming into the services.
Thank you, Ms. Palin. I do not see any other hands up at this point in time. I do want to reference that there were several letters of support that were also submitted on behalf of the bill that was incorporated in the packet and are also available online. There being no further discussion, the chair, I'd like to go to Representative Bierman for his final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the very good questions this morning on the program, and just would appreciate your support to move this ahead and move this forward, and good to be here. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Bierman. There being no further discussion, the chair renews his motion that House File 1390, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn. Excuse. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Let's see, there being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Okay, the motion being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion has prevailed. House File 1390 as amended is recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Bierman, for the bill. Next on the agenda is House File 1102, and we're going to aim for a vote by 9-10 on this bill. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill and begin your presentation?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to move that House File 1102 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. I will provide an overview of the bill, and then I will turn it over to our testifiers. We have Joe Club from Alina testifying, and we also get the opportunity to hear from Sue Hansen, whose outreach and advocacy inspired this bill. We also have received testimony from Dr. Eduardo Colon from Hennepin Health, and Sue Abderholden with NAMI is here to answer questions as well. I also want to just take a second and thank Representative Frankie for co-authoring this with me, along with Vice Chair Frederick, Representative Berg, and Senators Housley and Abler, who are carrying this companion bill in the Senate. Members, a little over a year ago, we became aware of a glitch in the HCBS waiver system, which provides which prevents what's called double dipping, which means people are not eligible to receive an HCBS waiver when hospitalized or in residential treatment. And logistically, this makes some sense. However, this current state of affairs leaves people with nothing if they're not re-enrolled prior to discharge, making it very difficult to holistically help people transition back to the community. This bill will suspend waivers so that people can return to the level of services they were receiving prior to hospitalization or residential treatment. As it stands today, people receiving an HCBS waiver like CADI, CAC, BI, or DD lose their eligibility after 30 days of an inpatient stay. And they are then required to reapply for their waivers and have to undergo another MnChoices assessment. This can take between 30 and 60 days. As you can imagine, this leaves people receiving waivers and their providers in a really tough spot. This bill will suspend the waivers for 121 days rather than discontinuing the services. This saves money and time, and most importantly, people's lives. We don't want people discharged to the community without the services that we knew that they needed prior to entering treatment. These home and community-based waivers provide services and supports so that people with disabilities and mental illnesses can live and thrive in the community. And these services are no less needed upon recovery. Though people may need additional services following their discharge, we believe people should, at minimum, leave a facility with the same level of care that they started with and not be burdened with another waiting period and have to undergo another initial assessment. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers, beginning with Joe Club from Alina and then to Sue Hansen.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Joe Club, if you'd like to identify yourself, who you're with, and please start your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Fisher and members of the Board of Behavioral Health Committee for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1102 and allowing individuals to maintain their home and community services through the HCBS waivers while receiving inpatient or residential care for up to 121 days. I am Joe Club, and I serve as the Vice President of Operations for Mental Health and Addiction Services at Allina Health. Allina Health is one of the largest healthcare providers, including one of the largest mental health and addiction providers in the state of Minnesota. Many of our mental health and addiction professionals have seen the unintended negative impacts of the HCBS waiver termination process on individuals considering seeking inpatient treatment and those who are being discharged back to community settings. Individuals in need of inpatient care, including mental health care and substance use disorder treatment, should not feel they have to choose between receiving care and maintaining their waiver. Eliminating the 30-day automatic termination will also eliminate barriers to potential good care. The application process, as Representative Hansen indicated, is complicated, and it's a two-step process. There's the reassessment, and then there's the authorization and distribution of funds. Our experience at Allina Health is this is going to actually take anywhere between 30 and 90 days for approval. In my role as operations leader of Allina Mental Health and Addiction Services, I have witnessed the unnecessary stress and burden on patients whose waiver has been automatically terminated. We are an organization that has 280 beds across the state of Minnesota, and this impacts about 10% of our inpatients receiving care. They are forced to navigate a complicated application screening process while they are trying to manage their mental illness and their recovery. In addition to causing undue burden and stress for patients and their families, the termination of waiver can delay a complicated patient's discharge to an appropriate community setting. Oftentimes, this is their home, and they have to restart, sometimes in a new living situation, and re-engage in new services. Allowing individuals to maintain their waiver for up to 121 days reduces barriers to services along the care continuum. We will not discharge individuals until they have secure housing and services in place. So this impacts patient flow. So individuals are waiting in our emergency rooms until we can discharge people to community services. So we're delaying access to care for a larger population. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1102 in support of allowing individuals to maintain their level of waiver services while they receive inpatient care. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Club, for your testimony. Are there any questions? Not seeing any hands go up. I will next move on to Ms. Sue Hansen. Ms. Sue Hansen, if you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and start your testimony, please.
Good morning. My name is Sue Hansen, and I'm a longtime member of NAMI Minnesota. My husband and I have three adult children. Our youngest son, Joel, is 46 years old and has lived with schizophrenia for 26 years. It took us over 15 years to get Joel into a stable housing situation with supports in place. Joel has had over 40 hospitalizations. He's had two long-term stays at Anoka, and I could not begin to count the number of ER visits. We finally got him on a CADI waiver, and the rest of it fell into place not long after that. Joel has now lived in a group home in the community for over 10 years. About a year and a half ago, Joel ended up in the hospital with catatonia. In fact, it's frequently referred to as schizophrenic catatonia. This is a very serious condition that leaves a person unresponsive, unable to eat or drink, and it very quickly becomes life-threatening. The docs did everything to keep Joel alive. He was on IVs, of course, and the day that they were going to put the NG tube into his stomach to feed him more nourishment, he began to swallow liquids. This was about 6 or 7 days into this particular hospitalization. This is the longest he could go without more substantive nutrition. He was very weak, very ill, and he had just started taking his antipsychotics again as well. So it took quite a while to get him back. He was in the hospital for 29 days. The docs wanted to keep him another week or two until he had stabilized more, until the meds had helped a bit more. In their estimation, he needed a bit more time in the hospital. But because we were afraid of losing his caddy waiver, the supports and housing that had taken us so long to get, on day 30, we asked the doctors to discharge him. He went back to his group home, and with intensive help from the staff, we were able to help him get back on his feet. There was no magic. It was a slow process, but likely it would have been a bit easier if he had been able to remain in the hospital a bit longer. To my husband and I, who had been through these 40-plus hospitalizations, Joel did not seem well enough to leave the hospital after 29 days. At the time Joel was hospitalized, his caddy manager stated to me that it could take 2 to 3 months to conduct the Min Choices assessment and get him back on the caddy waiver. After nearly 10 years with the same provider, it would have been especially difficult to find another provider who would understand his situation as well or provide as much support as was needed. The provider would have been willing to try to work with us, but we couldn't expect them to go without payment for the supports for that length of time. Joel didn't need another assessment. He needed to have the supports there for him when he was discharged, no matter how many days he was in the hospital. We cannot imagine what would have happened if he had been discharged on day 40 without any supports waiting for him and without being able to access any for months. In our estimation, even an extension of 2 to 4 weeks would have made all the difference in the world and allowed Joel to get the care inpatient that was needed at that time. I urge you to suspend, not terminate, caddy waivers when people are in the hospital or residential treatment for 30 days or more. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ms. Hansen, for sharing your story and your experiences with us. It really highlights the need for this bill here. Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Hansen? Are there any questions for the bill author or for any of our other people that are online to be able to answer questions? I see Representative Frankie. Representative Frankie, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this bill forward. This is a needed gap we need to fill. And as you and I, Chair, have discussed over our many discussions, I think this bill helps to address a lot of the situations that we have discussed about transition points in people's care and making those smooth, taking some of that stress and fear away to helping, you know, provide some positive outcomes. I mean, we're talking about a lot of tricky situations here. So once again, I just want to say that that's why I was happy to attach my name to this bill. And I'd like to see it go forward and have the situation dealt with. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Representative Frankie, and thank you for your support and work on this issue. I've also heard from people within my own district who've commented and said that this bill is really needed. They've had family that have gone through the situation where unfortunately they were discharged, and in some situations it was similar to what Ms. Hansen experienced. In some other situations, they remained in the hospital, lost the caddy waiver and or the connected waiver, and things did not go very well afterwards. It took a long time for recovery. We also have heard in committee about the fact that we've got a shortage of beds out there, and be able to time it so that where we don't have to worry about the waivers being available or not, knowing that they're there would help make that a much smoother process where people can stay connected and we have much better outcomes. I'm not seeing any other questions at this point in time. Representative Hansen, are there any final comments that you would like to make?
No, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you, members. You know, as you've heard from our testimony and from our members here, this bill is so critical to people like Joel and so many others. And so I just want to just pause for a second and say thank you, Sue, for advocating. Thank you for stepping up. This is how we create the change we want to see in the world. And I thank you for sharing your story with us. It really is an opportunity for us and viewers to get to hear from you today. And thank you, members, for your support in this. I'm looking forward to making this critical change. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to refer this to Human Services, Finance, and Policy, please. Thank you, everyone.
Very good. Representative Hansen has renewed her motion that House File 1102 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
All right. Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Thacker. Thacker. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker, Finn. Excused. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Backer. Okay. There being 10 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you. There being 10 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1102 is recommended for referral to Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Hansen. We will now bring the next bill up. Is going to be House File 1532, authored by Representative Frederick. This is a DHS policy bill for Community Supports Administration. We're limiting, this is a large bill covering many different areas, and we're limiting discussion today to certain provisions of the bill that relate to the behavioral health area. So, these would be sections 1, 2, 48 through 74 and 81 and 108. I do know that there's an author's amendment, and so as a result, this list will get a lot smaller if we adopt the author's amendment, which we'll get to momentarily. The rest of the bill is related to disability services and will be vetted in the Human Services Committee. We're going to try to get to a vote on this bill by 9:35. Vice Chair Frederick, would you like to move your bill and your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Fisher. I move the House File 1532 be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. I would also like to move the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape that I would like.
Okay, on the motion to adapt the A2 author's amendment and put the bill in the shape the author would like, is there any discussion or questions? I see Representative Frankie. Representative Frankie, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick. Could you please explain the amendment, because we're taking out a lot of sections here going through this, and a lot of sections that we would be dealing with in this committee. So I would really appreciate some explanation on that and where we're going with this. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, Representative Frankie. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Frankie, the language was used to be able to further work on those specific pieces to hopefully be able to address in the future.
And does your testifier have any further explanation that she can help with? Ms. Grammy, if you'd like to identify yourself and who you're with, please.
Mr. Chair members, for the record, my name is Christy Grauman. I'm with the Department of Human Services, and I can walk through the amendment for Representative Frankie and members so that you're aware what's in it. So lines 1.2 and 1.3 of the amendment are just clarifying the title of the DHS member that's on the Mental Health Advisory Council. So currently law refers to the member as the Assistant Commissioner of Mental Health, and that's not really a thing at DHS anymore. So we're changing that to the Assistant Commissioner who oversees behavioral health. And then lines 1.4 to 1.15 delete sections 48 through 55 and 57 through 72 of the bill. So these are sections that are technical changes that just update terminology from chemical dependency to substance use disorder and from the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund, sometimes referred to as CCDTF, to the Behavioral Health Fund. So the updates from chemical dependency to substance use disorder require a bit more work than we had time to accomplish for this session. So hoping to bring those changes back next session in the policy year. And then instead of doing the CCDTF to Behavioral Health Fund update section by section,
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm hearing a clicking coming through that's making it a little tough to hear things.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what that
Okay. Well, let's continue it. If the ticking continues, we might have to try to figure out another way to get your testimony in. But continue on, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so instead of having section by section changes, we're doing revisor's instruction to make those changes, and that's in section 108 of the bill. And then the last part of the amendment, lines 1.16 to 1.18, are related to a technical provision in the bill. And essentially, this just puts the language, the sentence structure from passive voice to active voice. Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions, but that is the totality of the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Grammi. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I understand that in the original language of the bill, I mean, some of it seemed pretty straightforward. We're changing from chemical dependency to substance use disorder, a lot of just technical terminology changes and things like that. But then in the amendment, I still am not understanding why, according to the amendment, if I read it correctly, we're deleting whole sections. So I guess, one, my question is why I didn't really hear that answer. Maybe the clicking was throwing me off, but where is that language coming back into the bill? Because that's the original language minus the, you know, where's the original language going? Because we're talking about, when we're talking about the thing, the section 48, the rules for SUD care, 49, intervention and advocacy programs, 50, civil commitment, 51, duties of the commissioner on SUDs, 52, local money, definitions, county, federal, 53, recovery, community organizations, and going on with the rest of them. So where is that language coming back into the original language? And then that's going to be vetted out at a later time? I guess I don't understand.
Before you start, Representative Frankie, are you thinking that we're eliminating current law right now?
Yeah, that kind of seems what it looks like, because there's, if you're looking at the bill, if Representative Frederickson's original bill here, you know, there's, when it came to us, it was stricken, like, let's just say line 22.6, stricken, alcohol and other drug addiction, added, a substance use disorder, okay? But then when you go to the amendment, page 19, delete section 48. Page 21, delete sections 49 to 52. Page 20. So we're taking out whole sections according to this amendment, if I read it correctly. So if we're taking out whole sections of the bill, what happens to current law?
I could maybe check with Ms. Sutterman if we take them out. Does this mean that the current law would stay in effect? And I don't know who's best, if that would be, say, Ms. Sutterman from House Research, who might be able to help us with that.
Mr. Chair and members, when we, in an amendment, when we take out a section of the bill, that means the current law stands. So by taking out a section of the bill, it's basically just taking out the changes to the section that the bill originally proposed. So, if that makes sense.
Representative Frankie, does that help?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just have one more quick question.
Go ahead.
So once we pass this amendment, what will we be taking up then?
And that would be going to, I believe, Ms. Grammi, if you could go through and let us know which sections that we'll leave back in that we're gonna be discussing today. And that would be, I think, helpful for the committee to have that information. Ms. Grammi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, the bill will, hopefully the sound is better. Please let me know if it's not, but section one of the bill will be retained, and that is germane to this committee. So we'll be discussing that section as well as section two. Section 56, 81, and 108, and sections 73 and 74.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Grammi. That helps quite a bit. Representative Franke, any other questions on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederickson. No, I guess no questions. I just more of a statement that, you know, we have this large agency bill, and here we are scrambling at the last minute, and we're expected to pass it out of committee. I want to get it in the shape that the author wants, and I want to be able to help the agency get the things done that they need to get done to accomplish. These last minute changes on these large bills are just making it very frustrating. So,
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's keep moving on this.
You're welcome. Thank you for your feedback there, Representative Franke. Appreciate it. We are now on to adopting the amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. This would be the A2 amendment. This will be a voice vote. If everyone could please unmute themselves. All in favor of adopting the A2 author's amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Okay, motion is adopted. Representative Frederick, please go ahead and present your bill as amended.
Thanks, Chair. House File 1532 is a DHS Community Supports Policy Bill. It includes provisions from several areas of the administration. But for the purposes of today's meeting, we'll just be hearing provisions related to behavioral health. The provisions in the bill that have been, these provisions have been thoroughly vetted with stakeholders over the interim, and the department has incorporated feedback from those stakeholders. The behavioral health provisions include changes to advisory council, technical changes, and updates to the children's mental health screening grants.
Okay, thank you, Representative Frederick. I noticed that we do have a testifier, Ms. Grammi from Department of Human Services. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I can walk through the sections of the bill if that would be helpful for you and members. I know we're on a tight schedule, so Okay.
Yeah, please go ahead and walk through the sections that are applicable to us, please.
Perfect. Mr. Chair, members, so moving to section one of the bill, this is a section that, a provision that improves the department's ability to gather data needed to evaluate outcomes of children's mental health screening grants. So more specifically, this proposal allows the department to collect individual screening results for the purposes of program evaluation and improvement. Children's mental health screening grants are administered by nearly all of our 87 counties, as well as three tribal nations. And these grants are aimed at early identification of mental health issues for children who are engaged in child welfare and juvenile justice systems so that they really get the right services at the right time and can successfully transition out of these programs and systems. Currently, statute prohibits DHS from collecting individual screening results, and this has really limited the amount of data that we're able to gather and to understand the effectiveness and how we might be able to tweak the grant administration to improve outcomes. So getting this additional information will just help us track the progress of a child who may have had a positive screening to ensure that they get the right follow-up services and that there's equitable outcomes for children across the state. It also helps us to provide more timely and meaningful feedback to counties and tribes who administer the grant so that they can make adjustments as needed to improve outcomes. Moving to section two of the bill, this is the section related to the State Advisory Council on Mental Health. So the State Advisory Council on Mental Health is a longstanding council. It's been around since 1987. It makes recommendations to the governor and to the legislature on mental health policies. This proposal essentially makes a membership update. So it removes the Mental Health Consumer Survivor Network Minnesota membership seat that is no longer an organization, and it replaces it with a more general seat termed the consumer-run mental health advocacy group. It adds a seat from the American Indian Mental Health Advisory Council so that we can make sure we have adequate and appropriate representation from the American Indian community on the council. We're also adding a member from the Department of Health at their request and clarifying, as I mentioned earlier, the title of the DHS appointed member. The council has voted
well, they've approved all of these changes. We've talked with them over the interim and they are supportive of these changes.
Okay,
moving.
Go ahead.
If helpful, I can move to sections, the technical provisions. So these are sections 56, 81, and 108. Section 56 updates a cross-reference to ensure that all eligible vendors of substance use disorder services are referenced. Section 81 corrects some language that was passed in the 2020 session related to intensive rehabilitative mental health services, also known as IRMS, or formerly known as Youth Act. So the legislation passed, that legislation made a number of changes to the statute, but unintentionally deleted some language that would require an individual treatment plan for each person receiving services. And so we just need to put that back. And that's something that stakeholders have agreed on as well. And then section 108 is the reviser instruction that changes the outdated terminology from CCDTF to the Behavioral Health Fund. And then the final two sections, sections 73 and 74, are related to the Opiate Epidemic Response Advisory Council, the ORAC. There's four parts of this proposal. And I'll just note that the council has unanimously voted to approve all of these changes. The first part of this proposal will stagger membership terms just so that half of the members appointed, their terms will expire in September of 2022. And then the other half would expire in September of 2023. So just some housekeeping to make sure that we've got not everyone's seat expiring at the same time. We've got a provision that would increase the amount of administration that a grantee could use when they're awarded a grant from the council. So right now, current law permits grantees to use 3% of the grant amount for administration, and this would change it to 10%. We just wanna make sure that grantees are able to cover their expenses and provide quality grant evaluation. The next change just really clarifies roles and responsibilities between the council and DHS. So making sure that it's clear that DHS is subject to state procurement laws and that we are really the ones that sort of issue the grants and the council makes recommendations to us about those grants. And then the final change modifies the timeline for legislative report. So right now we're required to report to the legislature in March. So this would change the legislative report from March to December so that the change is related to basically knowing the information that we're required to report on will not be known until in the fall or so. So March is just really not an appropriate time to be able to report. It's related to when we know how much funding is in the opiate account and giving us enough time for the council and DHS to award grants and then report that to the legislature. So that in a nutshell, those are all of the changes in this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions that members might have.
Thank you, Ms. Grammy. We will open it up for questions. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands come up at this point in time. So I will move on. There being no further discussion, I will move to Vice Chair Fredrickson for any final words. Oh, hold on. I'm sorry, I apologize. I see that Representative Frankie has raised his hand. Representative Frankie.
Sorry, I didn't know we were moving that quick, Mr. Chair.
I apologize, but that's all right. Go ahead, sir.
I guess, once again, as I've spoken about, I'm a little hesitant to move this bill forward because I just feel that a lot of this should have been done before it got to us, and a lot of these needed changes should have happened. I was wondering, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Fredrickson, if you would be open to an oral amendment. I know to spring this on you late, revolving around the formulation of the council. This is going to be one of my big pushes, but defining after and adding on the language here. Hold on, let me get my other screen going here. The State Advisory Council of Mental Health is created. The governor shall consider appropriate representation of communities of color, period. The council must be comprised of, and then we go into the thing. I would like to add after communities of color and underrepresented communities as defined in 148E.010 subdivision 20. And I'm sure going forward throughout the rest of this session and maybe on, you guys will learn this language from me. Underrepresented community means a group that is not represented in the majority with respect to race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender identity, or physical ability. I just want to make sure that we're encompassing all underrepresented communities in any of these advisory councils because I want everyone to have a voice that has not had a voice before. So I'm asking that you would be open to an oral amendment on this bill and then move it forward.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. Can you first of all reference the lines that were on here? I'm trying to find that section. I'm scrolling on.
That would be line 4.12, Chair.
4.12. Thank you, and I appreciate your patience as I'm getting to the right part there, so I can follow along as we do this. 4.13. Okay, I'm there at 4.12. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Frankie wants to be more inclusive, I'm going to be on board with that, absolutely. But what I would ask is that if he would be willing to meet with me and Ms. Graham from DHS before this would get moved into DHS or the Human Services Committee, that we could be able to figure this out in that space, if that would be acceptable.
So, Representative Frankie, Representative Vice Chair Frederick, you're suggesting is that you'd like to make the change at the next stop instead of here? Or are you open to making the change now?
If we could do it at the next stop, actually put it in the, that we can kind of meet about it, because I don't have any issues with being more inclusive. I would just like more time to actually like see it and visualize it and have more conversation about it offline. But I'm on board with always being more inclusive.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that would be great, Representative Frederick. Actually, we could probably have the language drafted up and sent right over to you, and you could probably just take on that role yourself. I really don't care how it gets done. I just want to see that it gets done. If you're amenable to that, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frankie. So Representative or Vice Chair Frederick, then you'll take care of connecting with Representative Frankie to make sure that this language, additional language, is then incorporated for as an amendment on your next stop then, correct, sir?
Yeah, I would want to make sure that we're including the department on part of these conversations too.
All right, thank you. Any further questions for the bill author or for the testifier? I'll give it another second here in case anyone's having trouble unmuting themselves. Not seeing anyone else popping up there. Representative Frederick, I'm going to you for the final word then.
So I know that there's the amendment initially took out a lot of things that would cover this by that this committee would cover. Not trying to complicate things. I think it was a proactive approach to try to address some concerns ahead of time. I appreciate the feedback from Representative Frankie, and I also just said thanks for any support on the bill.
Okay, thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. There being no further discussion, Vice Chair Frederick renews his motion that House File 1532, as amended, be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Kroos will take the roll.
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer. Backer. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson. Thompson. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Thompson. All right. Mr. Chair, there are 11 ayes and zero nays.
Thank you, Mr. Prost. There being 11 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails. House File 1532, as amended, is recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. Next will be coming up my bill. So at this point in time, I will ask Vice Chair Frederick to assume the chair and preside for the discussion and presentation of House File 1495.
Members, the rest of our hearing time today will be used to conclude our discussion of House File 1495 from last week's agenda. Chair Fisher, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1495 be recommended for referral to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Members, we've had in-depth discussion on this bill over the last week, and since that time, I know many of you have had the opportunity to reach out to your providers and communities to get feedback. There's been a lot of work and collaboration that's happened over behind the scenes in the past few years on this proposal. I hope that you've all been getting positive reviews. We've also received a large amount of written testimony from providers on today's hearing urging us to move the bill forward. But before we go further, I would like to move the A1 author's amendment at this time, which we discussed last week and reflects additional corrections and feedback for the bill. So, Chair Frederick, I'd like to move the A1 author's amendment.
Chair Fisher moves the A1 author's amendment. Are there any questions on the motion before we vote? Representative Frankie.
I represent Frankie.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Chair Fisher, would you just please give us a brief rundown on the amendment and what it does?
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Oops, I apologize.
That's it.
Chair.
Thank you.
May I go ahead, Chair Frederick? May I go ahead, Chair Frederick?
Yes, sorry. Okay. Chair Fisher.
I apologize. I'm so used to being in charge here. I apologize for getting in the way. Thank you, Representative Frankie. Yes, the amendment does a number of things. First of all, it provides more clarity. This is a big bill. It's 211 pages, 46 page plus 46 pages of articles that are being taken out of statute. So as this bill came out after its first presentation, there was a lot of feedback from people. And because it was such a large bill, there were errors that were found. So that some of it is, a lot of it is taking out language that was found to be duplicative or actually was missed the first time around, where there was an error, they thought it was going to be removed and it was not. There's some references in there that were also being referred to as needing more clarity, so it was helping provide more clarity. There was one section that was missed entirely that should have been in to start with, and that was a section after 45.27, where this whole section that was being added was originally omitted by unintentionally by the revisor's office. So it was reinserted here. It was important to have that put in. An example is lines 57.7 to 57.9 are deleted. It removes language that was included accidentally during revisions. So these are some examples of some of the things that were happening that we're just kind of going through. And this is also based on feedback to make sure that we don't have unnecessary language in there, making sure that we've got the cross-references are being correctly put in there. And if you'd like more details on this, we could also turn it over to Ms. Grammy if you'd like to additional information on that, Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Chair Fisher.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Just a brief overview from Ms. Grammy would be wonderful. Thank you.
Ms. Grammy. We cannot hear you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, apologies. I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Ashley Wortman, to walk through the amendment.
Mr. Ashley Wortman.
Thank you, Chair Fredericks and members. I think we've heard several times today, you know, there has been concern about amendments, and we want to say that we really do hear that. This is a difficult year for everyone to be working, meeting and discussing, for DHS, the revisor's office, stakeholders. This is a brave new world. And so we've done our best to move this process forward, but there have been a couple areas where we've had to make some corrections here. The highlights that I would give is that we, in several places, we needed to be able to take out some language that would be unclear or difficult to enforce evenly. In many cases, this was language that's currently required, but we heard additional concern from providers. As you get close to a bill moving forward, some of those concerns that have been on the back burner come to the fore, and that's a perfectly reasonable thing. Substantively, we heard and had heard a concern for some time about the required documentation of professional supervising staff. This was an area we knew providers were worried about, but we had moved forward with language that was more reflective of the present state. As we closed in, those concerns came back into focus. Providers asked us to reconsider once more, and DHS acceded. We identified other ways that we could get at the underlying value without requiring so much paperwork. So again, very much in the spirit of the bill, but it was just one of those times where it took a little bit of discussion in order to get to that final agreement. We corrected the drafting error in the omission sections of 245I-20. We aligned to 245A licensing language when talking about application procedures and the retention of documents. We inserted language to clarify the documentation when programs accept property or valuables from a client for safekeeping. This is a major source of complaints that DHS receives. We know that clear documentation by the provider allows the fastest and easiest resolution of these concerns, and so we've outlined that there. We removed some specifics on staffing patterns for mental health clinics and quality assurance measures for both clinics and ERTS programs. This is, again, an area where we had heard the concern from providers previously. As we closed in, DHS acceded to that request and striked those provisions. We identified where there was still strong language that underlines the value of multidisciplinary staffing in certified mental health clinics and quality assurance planning for both ERTS and certified clinics. And then in response to provider concerns, DHS offered language to assure providers that they would have notice and a choice of dates for scheduled program reviews of mental health clinics. If there was an emergency, an investigation of abuse, that could still trigger an unannounced visit. But if we're conducting regular business, we absolutely can provide notice and flexibility on scheduling to the provider. But that would be, I believe, an accurate and reasonable summary of the content of the amendment. If there are any specific questions, please do go ahead. The summary document also has context for each item that we've put forward.
Seeing no other questions, we will move for the approval of the amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are now on to the main bill as amended. As we've mentioned before, it is a large bill with many pages on it. And this represents many years of work of Department of Human Services and providers and people representing those who receive services to streamline a process that is outdated. Some of it goes back to the 50s and 60s, and also addressing new programs that have come in that has not had a lot of clarity. Example Rule 36, ERTS, very few specifics, leaving too much to be left open to interpretation, and allows clarity to occur there. It helps cleans up language and provide consistencies, updating, streamlining to make sure that the process will operate better. When you take a look at 46 pages of items being deleted, a lot of this was old, antiquated language or unclear language. And this is part of what we want to do is when we're working with our different communities and we're working with providers is that they've got the clarity to make sure that they're providing the services and focusing on the services of the client instead of having to worry too many times about, am I getting every I dotted and every T crossed, which takes away time for clients. It's becoming more client-centered. When a client is first looking for assistance and help and they're having a behavioral health crisis and they're needing help, when they come in to meet with the person, the last thing they want to do is spend an hour or two answering a bunch of questions. What they want to be able to do is start talking about the issues that they're dealing with and having the provider be able to focus on that, which makes it more client-centered instead of them having to collect a lot of information that could be spread out over time to better meet the needs of our people out there. It's making sure that as we're moving forward, that we are also getting to a number of the issues that have in the past not provided the clarity that's needed for providers. And also realizing that while this is a large bill covering a number of areas, there's some things that have not been done. There's still other things out there that will still need to be addressed. And so this bill moves the ball forward, but we have to expect that more work need to be done. I know that some of the hard work that was being done is like in an ERTS program when it comes time for discharge. So there's a lot of work done with homeless providers, other providers out there to make sure that it was seamless and that people had somewhere to go. We still have the problems where we're still too often boarding people in hospitals or in other inappropriate areas. We still have more work to do in these areas, but the bill starts now. If we were to wait for everything to be done at one time, we could be out there for another couple of years and the problems that we have are not getting addressed. So this bill does a lot to start moving in that direction. I will stop at that point and open it up for questions.
Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. Thank you, Chair Fisher, for all your work on this bill. The allotted time we've given to this bill in today's world of shortened everything and complications. I'm really glad that this bill is going to be cleaning up language, regulation, offering clarity. I'm really hoping that this bill is going to free up a lot of resources and time to provide for people in need and give that help to the providers to provide better service. This is a needed bill that's gonna, I'm really hoping to whatever we can do to shorten the length of time. I think you put it best to get these people or get everyone who may need it that help, because the time spent filling out paperwork, searching for answers, trying for these providers, just trying to find definitions sometimes to put into the right box on the right piece of paper. I wanna say that, around this bill, I've had a lot of questions and every time, not only with the letters that were provided to us in letters of support, but every time I met with an organization, one of the specific questions that I asked was how, and they weren't even necessarily meeting with me on this bill. And I would bring up this bill and say, how would this help you? Are you aware of this bill? What can it do for you? And most of them knew about the bill and were in favor of the bill and are really hoping the same things. That this gives them a lot of those tools of everything that it encompasses to help them move forward to provide better services. So I want to thank you. I want to thank the agency, and let's just get this moving forward and hopefully do some good work with it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Fisher.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Franke. Representative Backer.
Hi, thank you. I mean, Representative Franke, I do appreciate the work. I do have some concerns. I'm not necessarily with the bill. You know, probably, it's, when we use the word probably is a word that concerns me. I have seen that word bite us in the butt many times. I just have to get it on record. Being in the minority, I know I've heard this other times when we're in the majority, but from the minority, but this is even a greater concern, is that the public is really entitled to better transparency. I understand Chair Fisher is doing what he can, and this is nothing to bust his chops. I'm not saying that, but we may want to consider to take less bills up. We're making some language changes. I had a person that was walked in my makeshift office here, and he was listening. He's not normally involved with the process, and goes, boy, this seems like it's going quick. A layperson, like, they're just talking real fast, trying to get through. So, again, I'm not here to try to bust anybody's chops, but in the modern time, we know lawyers, litigation, and hopefully, and departments will make, can make rulemaking down the road 5-10 years from now, and the words that we pass matter, and the transparency, I'm concerned about the transparency. And that's what I wanted to share. These things that we're making are big changes. They may be little, have big impact, even though they're little word changes. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Chair Fisher, any follow-up?
I would like to say thank you to everybody for the feedback. I want to say I appreciate the fact that as a committee, we've been able to take quite a bit of time to look at the issue, starting way back at our first meetings throughout the entire committee hearings that we've had on the number of them. I know it's tough. We've got, you know, when you've got a big bill of, when you put it all together of over 250 pages, it can seem overwhelming and hard for people to understand sometimes, did we have the transparency there? And that's part of why we're going through this. I very much appreciate the work and the time that we've had with, I know, working with Representative Franke, staying in touch as we've gone through this process. What has really helped is that we've had a lot of input from providers out there, and it's been great to be able to focus on that, making sure that the people are impacted, or making sure that they've got their voice being heard and their work being appreciated as we go forward. It's one thing that is that in terms of transparency, we want to make sure that we've always got things posted out there. We've had some great, robust discussions. And I think for the size bill we've had, I think we've done a pretty good job on it. And I appreciate the support and input that I've received from all sides of the aisle to make sure that we're moving this forward. And so those comments right there. Just wondering if people have any further questions for me or any of the testifiers.
Seeing no other questions, we'll move for the vote. Chair Fisher renews his motion that House File 1495 as amended be recommended for referral to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Gross, will you take the roll?
Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Frankie.
Frankie, aye.
Frankie, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Baker.
Baker, aye.
Baker, aye. Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Katiza Watoon, aye. Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Pearson.
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Mr. Chair, there are 12 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 12 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. House File 1495, as amended, is recommended for referral to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, members. Chair Fisher, any announcements before we adjourn for the day?
Yes, thank you, Chair Frederick. Appreciate that. First of all, I want to once again thank everybody for the support in House File 1495. I want to remind people that are viewing that all the information on the bills and the testimony are online out there, and encourage people, if they have questions, take a look at it. We do have another stop coming up for this bill, so I would encourage people who've got any questions or thoughts to please stay in touch with me in the department. And I want to say thank you to Representative Frankie and everybody else for their input that we've had along the line, and I look forward to the continued input as we go forward. Announcements that we have is we've got one more regularly scheduled hearing before the first deadline, and we'll get that agenda out later this week. There is a chance we will have bills to hear during the second deadline week as well, but that is still to be determined as we monitor what's happening in the Senate.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.